Chapter 5.
His. Why had he not kissed her when he held her there? A few hours earlier he would not have asked himself the question. Even a few minutes earlier, when they had stood alone outside the house, he would not have dared to think of kissing her. But since he had seen her lips in the lamplight, he felt that they were his. Now, in the bright morning air, her face was still before him. It was part of the sun's red, and of the pure glitter on the snow. How the girl had changed since he had come to Starkfield. He remembered what a colorless slip of a thing he had looked the day he had met her at the station. And all the first winter, how he had shivered with cold, when the northerly gales shook the thin clapboards, and the snow beat like hail against the loose-hung windows. He had been afraid that she would hate the hard life, the cold and loneliness, but not a sign of discontent escaped her. Zena took the view that Maddie was bound to make the best of Starkfield, since she hadn't any other place to go to, but this did not strike Ethan as conclusive. Zena, at any rate, did not apply the principle in her own case. He felt all the more sorry for the girl because misfortune had, in a sense, indentured her to them. Maddie Silver was the daughter of a cousin of Zenobia Frome's, who had inflamed his clan with mingled sentiments of envy and admiration, by descending from the hills to Connecticut, where he had married a Stamford girl, and succeeded to her father's thriving drug business. Unhappily, Orrin Silver, a man of far-reaching aims, had died too soon to prove that the end justifies the means. His accounts revealed merely what the means had been, and these were such that it was fortunate for his wife and daughter that his books were examined only after his impressive funeral. His wife died of the disclosure, and Maddie, at 20, was left alone to make her way on the $50 obtained from the sale of her piano. For this purpose her equipment, though varied, was inadequate. She could trim a hat, make molasses candy, recite curfew shall not ring tonight, and play he lost chord and a potpourri from Armin. When she tried to extend the field of her activities in the direction of stenography and bookkeeping, her health broke down, and 6 months on her feet behind the counter of a department store did not tend to restore it. Her nearest relations had been induced to place their savings in her father's hands, and though, after his death, they ungrudgingly acquitted themselves of the Christian duty of returning good for evil, by giving his daughter all the advice at their disposal, they could hardly be expected to supplement it by material aid. But when Zenobia's doctor recommended her looking about for someone to help her with the housework, the clan instantly saw the chance of exacting a compensation from Maddie. Zenobia, though doubtful of the girl's efficiency, was tempted by the freedom to find fault without much risk of losing her, and so Maddie came to Starkfield. Zenobia's fault-finding was of the silent kind, but not the less penetrating for that. During the first months Ethan alternately burned with the desire to see Maddie defy her, and trembled with fear of the result. Then the situation grew less strained. The pure air, and the long summer hours in the open, gave back life and elasticity to Maddie, and Zena, with more leisure to devote to her complex ailments, grew less watchful of the girl's omissions, so that Ethan, struggling on under the burden of his barren farm and failing sawmill, could at least imagine that peace reigned in his house. There was really, even now, no tangible evidence to the contrary, but since the previous night a vague dread had hung on his skyline. It was formed of Zena's obstinate silence, of Maddie's sudden look of warning, of the memory of just such fleeting imperceptible signs as those which told him, on certain stainless mornings, that before night there would be rain. His dread was so strong that, manlike, he sought to postpone certainty. The hauling was not over till midday, and as the lumber was to be delivered to Andrew Hale, the Starkfield builder, it was really easier for Ethan to send Jotham Powell, the hired man, back to the farm on foot, and drive the load down to the village himself. He had scrambled upon the logs, and was sitting astride of them, close over his shaggy grays, when, coming between him and their streaming necks, he had a vision of the warning look that Maddie had given him the night before. If there's going to be any trouble, I want to be there, was his vague reflection, as he threw to Jotham the unexpected order to unhitch the team and lead them back to the barn. It was a slow trudge home through the heavy fields, and when the two men entered the kitchen, Maddie was lifting the coffee from the stove and Zena was already at the table. Her husband stopped short at sight of her. Instead of her usual calico wrapper and knitted shawl, she wore her best dress of brown merino, and above her thin strands of hair, which still preserved the tight undulations of the crimping pins, rose a hard perpendicular bonnet, as to which Ethan's clearest notion was that he had to pay $5 for it at the Bettsbridge Emporium. On the floor beside her stood his old valise, and a bandbox wrapped in newspapers. "Why, where are you going, Zena?" he exclaimed. "I've got my shooting pain so bad that I'm going over to Bettsbridge to spend the night with Aunt Martha Pierce and see that new doctor," she answered in a matter-of-fact tone, as if he had said she was going into the storeroom to take a look at the preserves, or up to the attic to go over the blankets. In spite of her sedentary habits, such abrupt decisions were not without precedent in Zena's history. Twice or thrice before, he had suddenly packed Ethan's valise and started off to Bettsbridge, or even Springfield, to seek the advice of some new doctor, and her husband had grown to dread these expeditions because of their cost. Zena always came back laden with expensive remedies, and her last visit to Springfield had been commemorated by her paying $20 for an electric battery, of which he had never been able to learn the use. But for the moment his sense of relief was so great as to preclude all other feelings. He had now no doubt that Zena had spoken the truth in saying, the night before, that he had sat up because she felt too mean to sleep. Her abrupt resolve to seek medical advice showed that, as usual, she was wholly absorbed in her health. As if expecting a protest, she continued plaintively, "If you're too busy with the hauling, I presume you can let Jotham Powell drive me over with the sorrel in time to catch the train at the flats." Her husband hardly heard what she was saying. During the winter months there was no stage between Starkfield and Bettsbridge, and the trains which stopped at Corbury Flats were slow and infrequent. A rapid calculation showed Ethan that Zena could not be back at the farm before the following evening. "If I'd supposed you'd have made any objection to Jotham Powell's driving me over," she began again, as though his silence had implied refusal. On the brink of departure she was always seized with a flux of words. "All I know is," she continued, "I can't go on the way I am much longer. The pains are clear way down to my ankles now, or I'd a walked into Starkfield on my own feet, sooner'n put you out, and asked Michael Eady to let me ride over on his wagon to the flats, when he sends to meet the train that brings his groceries. I'd a had 2 hours to wait in the station, but I'd sooner a done it, even with this cold, than to have you say, 'Of course Jotham'll drive you over,'" Ethan roused himself to answer. He became suddenly conscious that he was looking at Maddie while Zena talked to him, and with an effort he turned his eyes to his wife. She sat opposite the window, and the pale light reflected from the banks of snow made her face look more than usually drawn and bloodless, sharpened the three parallel creases between ear and cheek, and drew querulous lines from her thin nose to the corners of her mouth. Though she was but 7 years her husband's senior, and he was only 28, she was already an old woman. Ethan tried to say something befitting the occasion, but there was only one thought in his mind. The fact that, for the first time since Maddie had come to live with them, Zena was to be away for a night. He wondered if the girl were thinking of it too. He knew that Zena must be wondering why he did not offer to drive her to the flats and let Jotham Powell take the lumber to Starkfield, and at first he could not think of a pretext for not doing so. Then he said, "Colin, I'd take you over myself, only I've got to collect the cash for the lumber." As soon as the words were spoken, he regretted them, not only because they were untrue, there being no prospect of his receiving cash payment from Hale, but also because he knew from experience the imprudence of letting Xena think he was in funds on the eve of one of her therapeutic excursions. At the moment, however, his one desire was to avoid the long drive with her behind the ancient sorrel who never went out of a walk. Xena made no reply. She did not seem to hear what he had said. She had already pushed her plate aside, and was measuring out a draft from a large bottle at her elbow. "It ain't done me a speck of good, but I guess I might as well use it up," she remarked. Adding, as she pushed the empty bottle toward Maddie Colin, "If you can get the taste out, it'll do for pickles." Ivy, as soon as his wife had driven off, Ethan took his coat and cap from the peg. Maddie was washing up the dishes, humming one of the dance tunes of the night before. He said, "Oh long, Matt," and she answered gaily, "Oh long, Ethan," and that was all. It was warm and bright in the kitchen. The sun slanted through the south window on the girl's moving figure, on the cat dozing in a chair, and on the geraniums brought in from the doorway, where Ethan had planted them in the summer, to make a garden for Maddie. He would have liked to linger on, watching her tidy up, and then settle down to her sewing, but he wanted still more to get the hauling done and be back at the farm before night. All the way down to the village he continued to think of his return to Maddie. The kitchen was a poor place, not spruce and shining as his mother had kept it in his boyhood, but it was surprising what a home-like look the mere fact of Xena's absence gave it. And he pictured what it would be like that evening, when he and Maddie were there after supper. For the first time they would be alone together indoors, and they would sit there, one on each side of the stove, like a married couple, he in his stocking feet and smoking his pipe, she laughing and talking in that funny way as he had, which was always as new to him, as if he had never heard her before. The sweetness of the picture, and the relief of knowing that his fears of trouble with Xena were unfounded, sent up his spirits with a rush, and he, who was usually so silent, whistled and sang aloud as he drove through the snowy fields. There was in him a slumbering spark of sociability which the long Starkfield winters had not yet extinguished. By nature grave and inarticulate, he admired recklessness and gaiety in others, and was warmed to the marrow by friendly human intercourse. At Worcester, though he had the name of keeping to himself, and not being much of a hand at a good time, he had secretly gloried in being clapped on the back, and hailed as LDE or LD Stiff, and the cessation of such familiarities had increased the chill of his return to Starkfield. There the silence had deepened about him year by year. Left alone, after his father's accident, to carry the burden of farm and mill, he had had no time for convivial loiterings in the village, and when his mother fell ill, the loneliness of the house grew more oppressive than that of the fields. His mother had been a talker in her day, but after her trouble the sound of her voice was seldom heard, though as he had not lost the power of speech. Sometimes, in the long winter evenings, when in desperation her son asked her why she didn't say something, she would lift a finger and answer colon because I'm listening. And on stormy nights, when the loud wind was about the house, she would complain, if he spoke to her colon they're talking so out there, that I can't hear you. It was only when she drew toward her last illness, and his cousin Zenobia Pierce came over from the next valley, to help him nurse her, that human speech was heard again in the house. After the mortal silence of his long imprisonment, Xena's volubility was music in his ears. He felt that he might have one like his mother, if the sound of a new voice had not come to steady him. Xena seemed to understand his case at a glance. She laughed at him for not knowing the simplest sickbed duties, and told him to ride along out, and leave her to see to things. The mere fact of obeying her orders, of feeling free to go about his business again, and talk with other men, restored his shaken balance, and magnified his sense of what he owed her. Her efficiency shamed and dazzled him. She seemed to possess by instinct all the household wisdom that his long apprenticeship had not instilled in him. When the end came, it was she who had to tell him to hitch up and go for the Undertaker, and she thought it a night that he had not settled beforehand who was to have his mother's clothes and the sewing machine. After the funeral, when he saw her preparing to go away, he was seized with an unreasoning dread of being left alone on the farm, and before he knew what he was doing, he had asked her to stay there with him. He had often thought, since that it would not have happened, if his mother had died in spring instead of winter. When they married, it was agreed that, as soon as he could straighten out the difficulties resulting from Mrs. Frome's long illness, they would sell the farm and sawmill, and try their luck in a large town. Ethan's love of nature did not take the form of a taste for agriculture. He had always wanted to be an engineer, and to live in towns, where there were lectures and big libraries and fellows doing things. A slight engineering job in Florida, put in his way during his period of study at Worcester, increased his faith in his ability as well as his eagerness to see the world, and he felt sure that, with a smart wife like Zena, it would not be long before he had made himself a place in it. Zena's native village was slightly larger and nearer to the railway than Starkfield, and as he had let her husband see from the first, that life on an isolated farm was not what as he had expected when she married. But purchasers were slow in coming, and while he waited for them, Ethan learned the impossibility of transplanting her. She chose to look down on Starkfield, but she could not have lived in a place which looked down on her. Even Bettsbridge or Shadd's Falls would not have been sufficiently aware of her, and in the greater cities which attracted Ethan she would have suffered a complete loss of identity. And within a year of their marriage she developed the sickliness which had since made her notable even in a community rich in pathological instances. When she came to take care of his mother as he had seemed to Ethan like the very genius of health, but he soon saw that her skill as a nurse had been acquired by the absorbed observation of her own symptoms. Then she too fell silent. Perhaps it was the inevitable effect of life on the farm, or perhaps, as she sometimes said, it was because Ethan ever listened. The charge was not wholly unfounded. When she spoke, it was only to complain, and to complain of things not in his power to remedy, and to check a tendency to impatient retort he had first formed the habit of not answering her, and finally of thinking of other things while she talked. Of late, however, since he had reasons for observing her more closely, her silence had begun to trouble him. He recalled his mother's growing taciturnity, and wondered if Zena were also turning moodier. Women did, he knew. Zena, who had at her fingers' ends the pathological chart of the whole region, had cited many cases of the kind while she was nursing his mother, and he himself knew of certain lonely farmhouses in the neighborhood where stricken creatures pined, and of others where sudden tragedy had come of their presence. At times, looking at Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.